And welcome to Azure in the land of the long white hybrid cloud. I'm Keith Archibald from Revera. I head up the innovation program at Revera and also look into new service and product offerings for our customers. And this is Jaron Burbridge from Microsoft, who has kindly stepped in to replace my previous co-presenter, who unfortunately fell ill and is unable to help us out today. So Jaron's going to answer any particularly curly and difficult questions we get from the Azure side of things. But is that better?
Yeah, just give it to that.
Awesome. Okay. Can everyone hear me down the far corners? Is everyone awake? Good. All right, so we'll jump into it. So what I wanted to cover off today is firstly a little bit of a sync up on cloud terminology, because there's a lot of terminology and it's used in lots of different ways. So maybe just a bit of a background on that and get us onto the same page. And talk a little bit about the Cloud OS and the Microsoft Cloud OS vision. And then a bit about the Cloud OS network, which is part of that overall vision. And then some more specifically about Windows Azure Pack, which is part of the Cloud OS capability. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about how we at Revera are positioning WAP. We'll also then dive in a little bit more and look at the specific capabilities that WAP offers and demo, God's willing, have a look at some of that. So then we'll finish up just looking at how WAP coexists and how it integrates in a hybrid scenario with Microsoft's Azure capabilities. And to talk to you a little bit about some of the lessons learned and some of the future roadmap that we see in this space. So just want to set what I hope will be for you guys the key takeaway from this session, which is essentially, if you leave with remembering nothing else, if you're looking to harness the awesomeness that's in Microsoft Azure in terms of scalability and those capabilities, but you have a requirement to be able to do some or all of your cloud environment in country, then Azure Pack's definitely a really good option to be investigating, and particularly looking at it in a hosted service provider environment. So just before we jump to that, just want to cover off some terms and make sure we're all on the same page. So a lot of you guys probably know the stuff, but I think it's always kind of useful to cover it off again and highlight some of the different characteristics of the different cloud environments that we see. Essentially what we're seeing here is in the different as a service options, which components are managed by the provider that you're consuming them from, and which components are managed by yourself. So in this scenario, we move from the traditional environment on the left-hand side, where the enterprise is managing all of those components, through the infrastructure and platform capabilities, where there's a degree of abstraction of that complexity, right through to the software as a service model, where you're simply consuming an application and you have very little ability to customize that. So what's really important here is that we don't see these as competing or alternative technologies. They're complementary technologies targeted at different use cases. So one of the key things here is that they do focus on different workloads. So infrastructure as a service, for example, is very is really useful at taking existing applications, often applications that were conceived long before the cloud and virtualization environment came along, and running those in a much more efficient manner without those applications necessarily understanding that. So it's essentially extending the life of those and running them in a, introducing some of the capabilities of scaling up and scaling out that the cloud environments provide. Now, platform as a service is primarily targeted more at new development capabilities, and its key objective is to abstract all of that complexity of the underlying infrastructure, the scalability, the whole platform away from the developer and just allow the developer to get on and write code. So they, rather than having to figure out how to run infrastructure or how to manage that, they can just focus on that particular area. A platform as a service is obviously an ideal platform for software as a service, which is where we consume apps purely from a provider. So the other thing to highlight here, I think, is as you move from left to right, there's two things that change. One of them is the complexity, and the other one is the flexibility. So you don't get anything for nothing. So as you sacrifice some of the flexibility, you gain on not having to manage that complexity. And as an example, platform as a service, all the items in red are no longer your problem to manage. You still have the flexibility of writing your own application and managing your data, whereas software as a service, obviously, you take an offering from a provider, which is why software as a service providers target very common scenarios typically in the applications they write so that they have a good target audience. So in addition to the different types of cloud technology there's also different deployment options. Again, this probably isn't going to be too much of a surprise to anyone in this room. So ranging through from on-premises to in-country service providers and public cloud. And what we're going to spend the majority of the rest of the session talking about is the how Microsoft has the Cloud OS vision, which enables a lot of commonality across all of these deployment environments. So just wanting to contrast some of those deployment options from the previous slide there. I'm not going to go through all of these in detail. You'll be relieved to know, probably. But you see there the contrasting capabilities and options. So one of the big challenges we've had with on-premises environments over the years is the cost predictability. There's a lot of challenges there around spikes in CapEx when there's an upgrade cycle. There's application upgrades, which sometimes also drive hardware upgrades. So the run cost of those is very unpredictable. There's also some very specialized skills that's quite often required during those upgrade or migration periods that aren't necessarily required the rest of the time. So obviously one of the characteristics of both the cloud in country and public is the ability to move to per unit pricing models. Obviously one of the other key areas to call out there that's a difference is the where you can deploy. So in-country cloud clearly has New Zealand data sovereignty as an option, and I'll talk why that may or may not be important to you going forward. One of the other things to also keep in mind there is things like upgrades and capabilities are included in the cloud capabilities. So just wanting to cover off, I'm not pushing any particular agenda here, by the way, whether people deploy in country or elsewhere, but there are some reasons why for particular workloads for all organisations, and these will vary from organisation to organisation, why an in-country cloud requirement may exist. So one of them is obviously legislation. There may be, and this isn't necessarily limited to public sector. It could be private sector legislation in particular industries as well that require certain information to be available or presentable in a New Zealand legal sense or any other countries for that matter. Another one is data sensitivity, and this is a key one. And again, I don't think this one's limited to public sector. People's intellectual property in commercial organisations is just as important. And oftentimes there may be reasons why they want to know where that is and who's going to be able to demand access to it and set vague reference to the Patriot Act here somewhere. Then there's two kind of more down-to-earth practical reasons why you may need to consider some in-country capabilities as well. One of them is latency. So depending on the workload or the application or the size of your data sets that you're moving around, that could certainly be a consideration you have to keep in mind. And the other one is integrating with your existing system. So not many organizations are lucky enough to be able to move lock, stock, and barrel to the cloud all in one go. Usually it's a case of migrating different workloads at different times. So one of the considerations is how are you going to integrate those environments, that existing environments in with new ones that you're deploying in the cloud. And there may be reasons why those have to be, in terms of latency or the amount of data being interchanged or the security of the data being interchanged, that you want to consider in-country systems there. So this isn't going to be a big presentation on what we do at Revera. I just want to cover off one part of this and position how we're using Windows Azure Pack, which is obviously what we're talking about today. So we do have a vision of providing, through our cloud creator capability, a single source solution for customers to manage multiple cloud solutions in the cloudscape. So there may be workloads on our own clouds or on other providers' clouds, both in-country or potentially in the public cloud, platform as a service and infrastructure as a service. And one of the key characteristics of Cloud Creator is the ability to have that single place to see, control, and define, and more importantly, at times, remove access to those environments, but also have visibility of the workloads across the providers and be able to start looking at things like right-sizing those workloads, making the best use of those capabilities. And we see Windows Azure Pack, or WAP as affectionately known, as a key tenant here in terms of providing the platform as a service capabilities within that model. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. Just one last area here is to introduce, we've talked a little bit about Microsoft's Cloud OS vision. There's also a entity known as the Cloud OS Network within Microsoft. And on the screen there, you see a grab from the website. So what the Cloud OS Network is a selection of service providers from around the globe, and Revera is the provider in New Zealand, who work with Microsoft on a joint program for deploying Windows Azure Pack in their data centers. So really the real differences here is it's a joint approach. We've been working with a variety of people, but particularly David, who was to be my co-presenter, but who's unfortunately off ill. And includes reference architectures, which are technically validated by Microsoft, some joint go-to-market initiatives, some access to the roadmap and some ability to feedback into that. And what they see, obviously, from the providers is looking for providers that have strong capabilities in those particular markets. So one of those characteristics for us is obviously utilising our scale. We presently operate around 5,200 virtual machines as of when I checked a couple of days ago, and around 4.9 petabytes of storage across 5 data centres in New Zealand. So that gives us a fairly significant scale in which to deploy these technologies and get some real economies. Quickly give you an idea of some of the effort that goes into that work. We are going to have a quick look at a very short video, and then we'll jump into looking at WAP in some more detail. Or maybe we're not, if this machine doesn't have internet access. Okay, we might jump come back to that later on then. Excellent. What do we fancy? Restart? Just I'll show you that later on, perhaps on the other. to this one, I think. Cool. All right. So talked a little bit about Microsoft's vision around the cloud OS. And so their vision there is very much to provide a compatible set of technologies and capabilities right through from their data centers with Microsoft Azure, through service providers with programs like the Cloud OS Network, down to the capabilities in on-premises data centers with the Windows Server and System Center and some of the components there. So the way Microsoft positions Windows Azure pack. So essentially it's using that's the cloud scalability and the capabilities that they've learned through running their own Azure environments, and building upon the core capabilities such as virtualization and Hyper-V and Windows Server to provide those multi-tenant, ready-to-go services such as platform as a service, websites, and IIS, and bringing a whole lot of the automation and a small part of the secret sauce down from Azure into the service provider and on-premises cloud environments. It also, and this is quite key as well, enables a lot of core capabilities and commonality across those platforms as well. And we're going to cover off a little bit more of that as we go through. So what is Windows Azure Pack? Essentially sums up the core components at this point. First and foremost is a service management portal, which is used by both the administrators and the customers to be able to subscribe to services, manage services, provision infrastructure and platform as a service capabilities such as websites. And the underlying functionality is shown there. And we're going to dive into each one of those in a little bit of detail and have a look at how they work and have a bit of a demo of those as well. So how are we positioning Windows Azure Pack? Firstly, one of the key things to remember is that developers want to be famous. They don't want to develop for an environment that's unique to one particular set of technologies or one particular environment or provider. They want to obviously develop in environments where they have the most ability to be able to reuse code, to be able to deploy to and sell their wares to as many potential customers as possible. So it's really important, we believe, when looking at a platform as a service capability to offer into the marketplace, that it's aligned with a strong offering and strong standards from elsewhere. And WAP obviously provides, we believe, this, and that's why we're focusing it primarily as an offering for DevOps in the platform as a service space. And some of the key reasons for that are obviously the compatibility with Microsoft Azure. It supports well-known dev technologies, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. Opens up really good hybrid scenarios and has key things like inbuilt scalability. So diving into a little bit more detail now, we'll first have a look at the service management portal. So the management portal is, as I said, designed for two audiences, the customers or the consumers of the services who are going in and wanting to have self-service provisioning capabilities, but also the service provider or IT admin who's wanting to go in and create plans and offerings for those people to be able to use. Fundamentally as well, it provides an application programming interface, which is really key in the modern scalable web world where a lot of functionality applications are now wanting to be able to call on themselves or call via APIs rather than relying on a human to be going out and provisioning that. And we saw a little bit of that in the keynote yesterday with the data economy, just how powerful APIs are in terms of harnessing the capabilities of the cloud and the web. So just in a little bit more detail on this architecture slide, we'll see that the two audiences target slightly different components. So fundamentally, starting from the bottom, we have commodity cloud storage servers and network capabilities, which can be the existing ones in the data center already. So there's no specific requirements there. Ideally, obviously, you want to deploy something like this on a fairly high density environment, typically like a blade environment, just to get that kind of efficiency and optimum use of your space. On top of that, we lay a system center and Windows server. And then on top of that is the service provider foundation, which is where Windows Azure pack that you see highlighted in the white box there ties in and provides those capabilities. So one of the key themes I've been talking about is the compatibility and consistency between Microsoft Azure and Windows Azure pack. So you hopefully see that demonstrated here. It's very similar user interface and capabilities across both those dashboards, which means one of the key aspects of that is not needing to retrain people particularly if they're working in hybrid environments or they're familiar with one of the environments. They can jump straight into the other and be familiar. So we're just going to jump across now and have a little bit of a look at that consistency in action, if I get the right button. So we've got some environments running on Windows Azure Pack, and over here we've got Microsoft Azure running public Azure. So I'm just going to run through a few quick scenarios here. So we're currently, so just to, so you can kind of tell them apart because they do look a bit similar. Azure is an Internet Explorer and Windows Azure Pack's in Firefox. Just demonstrating, of course, that standards are also supported so we can use different browsers and capabilities. So what we're going to look here is that we're going to look at creating Microsoft public Azure, a virtual machine offering, and we're going to see the options that we demonstrated there. And just then jump across and have a look at just how consistent that is in Windows Azure Pack. And again, there's a few less options at the moment because we haven't deployed all of the templates and capabilities into this particular environment. But the key takeaway here is that it's a very consistent environment. You don't need retraining or for your staff or particularly if they're not focused as being infrastructure staff. So we'll just jump back to the slide deck. We are going to come back and look at it in a little bit more detail going forward at each of the roles. So, beginning to talk about the roles, the first one we're going to cover is the infrastructure as a service role within WAP. So, there's two key pillars to the infrastructure as a service role, and those are virtual machine capability and virtual networking capability, which provides connectivity through to obviously the internet and customers and other applications. So some of the core offerings here are obviously self-service infrastructure as a service through the dashboard or management portal, which you've just seen a bit of a preview to. The ability to create virtual machines, which can be used to run applications, obviously, as can any virtual machine. And those aren't just Microsoft Windows Server virtual machines, but obviously all of the other ones supported in the environment, including various versions of Linux. These virtual machines can also be useful in adding capabilities or more enhanced application functionality into the website's role, which we're going to talk about shortly. So the virtual machines are also compatible with the virtual machines in Microsoft Azure, so the ability to move that back and forward is an option. The virtual machines come in two different forms, which we're going to cover off, and I'll explain a little bit more about those when we jump into the demo again. Those are standalone virtual machines, which you would typically use to host a more legacy workload, that doesn't really understand that it's in a scale-out cloud environment. And then there are virtual machine farms which are able to be scaled, have the instances scaled, and the configuration automatically moved across those scale units. And then they obviously connect down through to the storage and the virtual networking capabilities, as you would expect in such an environment. I'm just quickly covering off virtual networking. So there is obviously virtual networking in the flavor of NVGRE as part of the CloudOS and Windows Azure Pack capability. Really, just in a nutshell, what that enables is secure multi-tenanting of environments. You'll see here the yellow machine and the yellow network and the blue machine and the blue network, or what's commonly talked about as the Coke and Pepsi scenario, where you never want the two to meet. So one of the capabilities that is available here is the ability to have overlapping IP ranges in those different tenants and not need to readdress those. When we get to the lessons learned section, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the challenges we've had in the virtual networking in the early days. So I'm going to jump in now, and we're going to have a look at some of the infrastructure as a service roles. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to look at, as you see, I mentioned that we're standalone servers, and then there's the server farms or roles, so we'll cover that off in a little bit more detail in a minute. So when we go into a particular virtual machine, we're going to look at one that's already been configured here. We can see a dashboard which shows some information on what that virtual machine has been up to over a period of time, and some quite useful information on its configuration. We can also see, obviously, some of its core characteristics, its IP addresses, and the resources allocated to that virtual machine. Now, in this particular type of standalone virtual machine, because it's intended for hosting more traditional workloads that may not understand that kind of scale-out architecture, we can scale these up and down, which is a core cloud characteristic, obviously. But to do that, we need to go through and shut those down. So I'm just going to demonstrate what we would do to do that now. So we'll shut this down, of course, having checked that it's no one's using it, and done all the other nice things that you do, send out change control, alerted people. And once that's done, we can go into the configure tab, and we see we're able to change the resource allocations assigned to that particular virtual machine. And again, the whole point is this is that you don't really need to have the IT people in the organization doing this. You can be allowing the DevOps to be self-managing this type of stuff. Of course, if you're a DevOp, you know what they're going to do. They'll go for the largest one possible. But nevertheless, we won't in this particular instance, mainly out of interest of time of reconfiguring it. So once that's done, I can then go back in to the dashboard view and restart that virtual machine. And as simple as that, we've scaled the resources that were allocated to it. So we'll just wait for that to start up, and see the status has now changed back to running. And just going to demonstrate one other thing here is that we're able to connect in to these virtual machines and manage them as traditional through the native tools on the particular server. Not great to, I'm trying to remote into a server you've just restarted, of course, because that tends to happen. Could do, give it one more go, otherwise we'll try one of the other ones. because I did just restart that, so it's obviously probably still spinning up. Here we go. And there you go, so we're onto the server console there, and we can obviously manage it using the various tools. It will come up in a moment. What we'll do is we'll just put that to one side and come back to it in a minute. It should be logging in though. So the next thing I want to demonstrate is again, it's probably not a great idea to try and log onto a server you've just restarted. There we go, just to prove it does actually work. You've all seen a server before, so I will just connect at this point. So contrasting that reallocation and customization of the resources allocated to a server with the ability to create farms of servers with the same configuration, which is what we're going to go through and do now. So again, the key reason why you would use one or other of these things is more around the capability of the application you're deploying and how well it's going to manage being scaled out across multiple instances. So the more legacy applications you tend to use in the standalone roles. So what we're going to do is go ahead and create a virtual machine role. And we're going to pick from a gallery. And what we're going to do is pick Windows Server 2012 R2. And we're going to give it a name. We're going to call it App Farm 2. Now, this isn't the name of the server. It's a little bit misleading, this particular import field. This is the name of the group or the role, and then there will be particular instances within that, as we'll see shortly. And then we can pick the base characteristic that we're going to start with to begin with. So we'll just choose a few different options here. And again, these can all be scaled as you go, so none of this is really the initial deployment characteristics rather than any permanent configuration. Obviously, we need to provide a very secure password. WORD. And then this bit here is quite cool. So as what this is going to do for us isn't where the automation characteristics and some of the cool stuff that comes down into WAP from Microsoft Azure comes into play. So this is where we're going to specify the name. So when we scale out instances, this is the format it's going to use for naming those additional servers we create. So having specified that, we can go ahead and provision that. So while that's provisioning, what I'm going to do is jump into one that was already running, which is this IIS farm one here. And if we have a look at that in the dashboard, we can see some of the characteristics of it there. We can also see that there's an instances tab, and at the moment there's one instance of this particular IIS farm running. So what we're going to do is go ahead and scale that, and we're going to increase that to two instances. We can also choose different sizes as well, but for simplicity we'll keep the small one, but scale it out to two instances. So we'll just save that. And what that's now going to do is build another instance of that server. So completely automatically, it's going to create another instance, including the applications that are on there. So in that case, it was an IIS server, or not in this case. Worked half an hour ago. Um, Anyway, so you get the concept there. So basically, it's a pretty cool ability to scale out those workloads, so you can add multiple instances, scale them up and down. And what was different there also is that as against the VM role, the standalone role where you had to shut it down to configure it, you don't need to actually have an outage on your application to do that, so you can scale those out and change their characteristics as you go. Okay, I think we'll probably leave that there. This is the one we, the new AppServe file. I think that's still, if we go into the dashboard, we'll probably see that, yeah, so that's still provisioning. So when we go back in to look at the next demo on platform of services, we'll jump back and have a quick look at that to see where that got to. How are we doing for time? So the website platform as a service role is, not surprisingly, intended to host websites. So the key things here are that it's consistent for developers with developing and deploying in Microsoft Azure and all of the standard technologies they're used to using. So the tool sets that they use, like Visual Studio, potentially for developing, they're able to continue to use and integrate. But what's more important is it abstracts a whole bunch of complexity away from deploying for those developers, so they can just focus on actually building applications. Because all the smarts around how you scale those instances out is covered by the platform as a service capabilities of Windows Azure Pack. And it's also flexible and open, so it supports hosting a whole bunch of technologies, not just Microsoft technologies, but a lot of other common development technologies out there. And also is backed by a database role within Windows Azure Pack, which we'll cover off in a little bit more detail coming up, which supports both SQL and MySQL capabilities as well. And again, much with as with the virtual machine roles, the website roles come in a variety of flavors. There's an introductory, I just want to do something really simple, 3 offering, which has some limitations, one of which is no SSL and no scaling, right through to some shared multi-instance roles or dedicated roles, which all really depend on what the particular use case for the application is and what the customer needs. Now, one of the other key characteristics, as I mentioned here, is the ability to scale across multiple servers, which we'll show you in the web interface shortly. But why this is really important, I don't know if there's many developers in the house, but as you add more web servers to a farm, it becomes exponentially more complex in a traditional environment to keep those in sync, keep all the versions the same, deploy to them all at the same time. So it becomes quite complex. What the web roles in Azure enable us to do is abstract a lot of all that configuration information out from the actual roles and have it deployed onto those roles as you scale them out using automation. There is also the ability to deploy some common web technologies from templates as well, so things like WordPress. And again, this is quite consistent with what you've probably seen in other sessions today from Microsoft Azure. And also for the developers, the ability to support all of the common tools and capabilities that they're used to working with for their source code repositories and management, but also the way that they develop the code and deploy it. So we're going to jump in and have a little bit of a look at this now. So we can see there's a bunch of websites here. We're going to create a new website just to see that process. Ah, sorry. Thank you. It's good that someone's... Thanks. It works much better when you can see it as well. So we're going to call this TechEd 2, and we're going to go ahead and deploy it. So you'll see there that it's spinning up by default down the bottom there as a 3 instance. I talked about those different instances, and we'll come back to that some more. And if I click on the URL, whoops, it's probably a little bit fast because it's literally just deployed. No? Oh, we're all looking good there. I might have mistyped. Yeah, so that's generally the landing page you would get when you first create a site. That's because I misspelled it. So we're going to go ahead and look at how we scale up that role. So at the moment, as we said, it's running as a 3 instance. So we've got the options here now of choosing a basic shared, which we can then scale across multiple IIS instances within a web farm. Or we can go to a reserved instance where we actually get to have a dedicated compute unit that's running for those particular for that particular website, and again have the ability to scale. We'll just pick basic shared and maybe 3 instances. And we'll go ahead and save that. Now what it's telling me here is that I was previously on the 3 plan, but now I'm about to move to a plan where the service provider is going to charge me, which is a pretty useful kind of warning. So we click OK on that, and it's going to go ahead and modify that. And if we go back to the dashboard, we can now see that, and oops, we can now see that it's changed to the shared instance rather than the 3 instance. So the next thing we're going to do is just have a look at the compatibility between, in terms of deploying websites and applications between Microsoft Azure and Windows Azure Pack. Now, are there any developers in the house? Okay, this is going to be excruciatingly painful for you because I'm by no means a developer and don't really know my way around Visual Studio, but just bear with me. We will have a go at it anyway. So we're going to jump across to Microsoft Azure, as in the public cloud variety thereof. And we're going to create a website here. And we're going to call it West Coast of the US sounds fine, so we'll go ahead and provision that. Okay, and once that's provisioned, we can go in and have a look on the dashboard. And there's a key option here, which is in amongst all the other capabilities that we can see, which is the ability to download the publish profile. So we will save that. And then we're going to jump into Visual Studio. And just to prove that we're actually deploying to both Azure and WAP, we're going to just change this. This is as close as I get to cutting code. And I realize this isn't it. We're going to call this Keith's TechEd WAP demo. And then what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and publish that. And we called it AZ TechEd 2. Validate the connection. And we'll go ahead and push that up. Now, this is a pretty basic site, I grant you, but the concept I'm trying to get across here, this is currently deploying to Microsoft Azure, but we're going to do the same thing in a moment with WAAP. And the concept here is that it's identical. So you can take your applications and your code. Developers don't really need to relearn anything. They're able to operate in both environments. And we are now just waiting for that website to load. And there we go. So that's on Microsoft Azure in the public cloud. And the same character, same capability, if we were to go into one of our websites on Windows Azure pack now and have a look, we can see again that there is the option to download the publish profile. And jump back into Visual Studio. Import in our connection string from, what's that one I used? From Windows Azure pack this time. And as you can see, the process is exactly the same. Validate the connection. It's amazing how things that take a couple of seconds when you're doing them just normally take an infinitely long period of time when you're standing in front of a room full of people. So they did actually validate, and we'll go ahead and push that up. So hopefully what that demonstrated was that there's a lot of compatibility in those, the way those two environments work. And so you'll see now from the URL that that's actually now running in the WAAP environment as against the Azure. Well, they're running in both now. Okay, let me just jump back to the slide. So we're just about finished up now, guys. Cover off a few more concepts and then just round out with the lessons learned. So really quickly cover the service bus, which is another of the capabilities provided in WAAP. So the service bus is all about providing reliable inter-application messaging capabilities. Essentially taking those from being synchronous and making them asynchronous. Now, why is that important? It's really important in a cloud environment, particularly a hybrid cloud environment where you may have different components of your application scanning different cloud capabilities or providers from public Azure through to maybe a WAAP deployment. So it provides a reliable transport mechanism to interface between those. And the key thing that's important here is it abstracts all the complexity of doing that again away from the developers and just allows them to use that capability. So the scenarios you might see there would be some hybrid examples, which I've kind of talked about. So finally, there's a database as a service capability as well as part of Azure Pack. Not surprisingly, it provides databases. Which can come in the flavour of either SQL or MySQL. Primarily designed at this point in time to integrate into the web site roles that we've been looking at, which obviously is important if you're developing pretty much any sort of web application that requires to store and maintain data. One of the other great characteristics in a service provider model when you're using this is the ability to leverage the way service providers do licensing for the SQL licensing as well, which means that you can use SQL, but you don't need to have SQL licensing of your own because you're just consuming that and it's bundled into the offering. We'll just really quickly have a look at this because I know we're getting a bit towards the end of the session. So essentially, actually what I'll do is demonstrate it with a website. So when we create a website, one of the options is also to create a database. And what we can see there, I'm not going to go ahead and do this whole thing because I think you get the gist of it and I just want to finish up on. But you see there that we have the ability when we're creating a website to create a new database or to connect to one of the existing databases that we have within our tenancy. So finally, I just want to cover off extensibility of the environment. So as we've seen, there's some core capabilities built in, but it does obviously expose some very powerful APIs into the service provider framework within System Center. So the ability to develop custom services is obviously key here, and we're going to see some more of those coming through in the CloudOS network program. In terms of service provider deployments, you also obviously need to add on some extra capabilities, which is the ability to sign up customers and integrate identity, but and not least importantly, obviously, the ability to bill those customers. So those aren't core capabilities of the products, but all of the information you need to be able to leverage and integrate those in with your existing storefront capability is in there and is able to be accessed through the application programming interfaces. In terms of creating the, you've seen me looking at it from a customer's point of view or and what options are available. These are put together by the administrators in terms of cloud offerings and plans within those offerings. And customers subscribe to services which they can choose between different plans. And an example of that you saw was the website scaling from the three through the shared through the dedicated resource. So the characteristics around those can be customized in each deployment of WAP for each customer if you want. So you can have a variety of different granular offerings to suit different use cases and different people. So really what we're seeing here is in a full deployment for a service provider environment, WAP represents the component on the right-hand side. Typically, you'll have a bunch of other components there as a service catalog and some other services. And the concept here is that the WAP part is most likely going to be used by your DevOps guys to actually do the development and provisioning of those environments. So a lot of the people actually consuming the applications that are being deployed in there may not use the WAP portal themselves. They may just be using the applications that are running on WAP. WAP is there more for the DevOps IT pros to manage those environments. So this slide shows the typical integration between a service provider control panel environment. So fundamentally what we're covering off here is you set up the plans and offerings within the Windows Azure pack capability. Then you expose those to the service catalog for the service provider, so their front-end storefront, essentially. So the customers can go in and first choose how much resource they might potentially want to limit themselves to, decide who's going to have access through the storefront. But then once those initial provisioning tasks have been created, the DevOps guys would then jump in and use the familiar WAP interface that they're used to, because it's the same as Microsoft Azure, to do a lot of the day-to-day administration and support. And so just finish up now on covering some of our CloudOS and Windows Azure pack learnings to date. Firstly, you'll have probably noticed quite a lot of the time through this presentation I've talked about service providers rather than on-premises, and this is the reason for that. This is the minimum number of units you need to deploy for a scale-out single stamp of Windows Azure Pack. So if you want to offer all of the roles, the websites, the IaaS roles, the databases service roles, this is the number of virtual machines you need to drive that one stamp environment. Now, that's the ability to provide scaling within one data center. If you want to do highly available disaster recovery scenarios across two data centers, then you're looking at a minimum of two of these. I'm not trying to put you off here, but what I'm trying to get at is to achieve a lot of the benefits of this type of environment. A lot of New Zealand type organizations probably not going to want to build out of that scale. There may be some that do have that amount of workload. So you may want to consider whether it's an offering best consumed by from a service provider that's offering it, potentially Rivera. Sorry, shameless plug. The other thing you've got to keep in mind here too is you typically, in addition to disaster recovery, to data center deployments, you are probably also going to want at least one dev UAT stamp as well, so that you can test upgrades, test people that want to be targeting your API, because you don't really want them to be doing their initial testing on your production deployment. So just kind of keep that in mind. It's an awesome capability, and it has been scaled down from the sort of scale that you see in a Microsoft data center, but it's still not a trivial deployment. So lessons learned, the first point is the one I've just covered. It's not an inconsiderable task just to get that fully scaled out working environment going. We've had some fun, and these aren't so much, I guess, digs at anyone in particular, but more just some lessons learned for people that might be looking at doing it themselves. We've certainly had some fun with the technology being ahead of the documentation, which is great because it means that people are, in some ways it's great because it means people are obviously innovating and adding new capabilities into WAP, but it's also quite challenging. And as I said, we're doing a joint deployment with Microsoft on this, so the fact that we have these challenges is obviously quite significant there. There was a little bit of a problem, and I alluded to this when we were talking about the virtual networks around the third-party support. So the virtual networking capability with NVGRE is certainly quite capable. Where it had some challenges, which are just starting to be addressed quite well now, are the ability to integrate with third-party products, so firewalls like F5s or other type devices like that. So to be able to actually get off those virtualized networks and connect to other capabilities and services. On a plus and a positive note, in the time that we've been involved in the program, there's been a huge upswing in the focus of Windows Azure Pack and the Cloud OS program as in general. Microsoft's certainly really embracing that whole idea. The Cloud OS vision across on-premises service provider, Microsoft Azure, and we've seen a lot of focus and a lot of love for the service providers there, which has been great. And finally, it may seem like an insignificant thing, but I actually think it's quite an important point. So Windows Azure Pack has now been moved within Microsoft to be part of the team that also looks after Azure. So previously, when it started life, it was called something I kind of remember now, Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. It was the longest acronym on the planet. And it was run at that stage by the server and tools team, which meant that it was kind of always a bit disconnected from Azure. So the reason I think this is quite important is that obviously that means there's going to be a lot tighter integration. Features are going to come down more quickly from Microsoft Azure to Windows Azure Pack, and the compatibility is going to be there in a lot better. A better way. So that's it for me. Thank you very much for your time and enduring me driving Visual Studio. Here's some related sessions. You should check out Getting Foxy with Azure IaaS by our good friend Chief Fox, because I think that'll be quite entertaining, if nothing, not least because it's the best title on TechEd. And feel free to try and track me down at the Happy Hour Hub, or hit me up later on Twitter. There's some WAP resources. You don't need to write these down because you'll get these slide decks later, but there's some quite useful links there. Thank you very much. If there's any questions, maybe just take them offline up front, because I think we're running a little bit into the other person's time.